Have you ever had a completely unexpected surprise? Something so unexpected and perfect that it left you stunned? Today, if you're interested in Silverlight 2, we have just such a surprise for you. And if you're not interested in Silverlight 2, go away. This program won't do you any good. Okay, they're gone. And your Silverlight surprise? It's waiting in this episode of the Sparkling Client Podcast.
Hello, I'm Eric Mork.
And I'm Monica Mork. We're Silverlight consultants and software enthusiasts. Welcome to the Sparkling Client Podcast, recorded February 27th, 2008. Sparkling Client is a podcast about Silverlight and other web client technologies. It's meant for developers and designers who are interested in making the next generation of great-looking web applications. Here's how it works. You give us 15 minutes of your time, and we give you the tools to build amazing web clients. For more information and show notes, see sparklingclient.com. Also, please consider leaving us feedback at the site. We're always looking at ways to make the show better. Warning, we're talking about software that is under development. What we talk about is based on what we think is likely to emerge from Microsoft over the next few months. The Sparkling Client Podcast is brought to you by Silver Bay Labs, the consulting company that Eric founded. If you have need of professional services for Silverlight, ASP.NET Ajax, or related technologies, visit us at silverbaylabs.org. Each week, we cover a specific set of questions. This week, what has Scott Guthrie just announced regarding Silverlight 2? And what does a day in the life of a Silverlight 2 developer look like? Let's get started. Eric, what's the surprise?
Well, we've been waiting for Mix to learn about Silverlight 2, and normally what happens is this sort of information is only presented at Mix. We only hear about it once Scott Guthrie or some other person is on the stage at Mix. The old information we have about Silverlight 2, it's pretty stale, months and months old, but guess what? This was a total and complete surprise, but Scott Guthrie posted on his blog some information about Silverlight 2 before Mix, and this was completely not what we expected. There are some nitty-gritty details about Silverlight 2. We're going to go over those on the show. And he also has a code sample in Silverlight 2, which we're going to go over in the show.
Eric, what is Mix and who is Scott Guthrie?
Mix is the big web development conference for Microsofties. So if you're a web developer in the Microsoft arena and you go to one conference a year, it's probably Mix. It's the big one. It's where all the cool stuff is announced. It's where all the cool Microsoft.NET kids hang out. It's the place to be. Scott Guthrie. Scott Guthrie is now a vice president in Microsoft. I think he was just recently promoted, so congratulations. He's in charge of things that we're interested in here on the Sparkling Client Podcast, such as ASP.NET, ASP.NET Ajax, IIS, Silverlight, and the list goes on and on. By all accounts, he is an upstanding individual and a really smart guy, and he put this information up on his blog, and we're going to cover it today.
Great. Well, let's get back to that surprise. Let's answer the following question. What has Scott Guthrie just announced regarding Silverlight 2?
If you want to follow along, you can at shrinkster.com/v96. That's the blog post that Scott just put up, so shrinkster.com/v96. And if you don't read his blog, you probably should if you're interested in this sort of stuff. It's where a lot of important announcements, though this was totally unexpected, but a lot of important things do cross that blog. So it tells us what to expect at Mix in regards to Silverlight.
Eric, can you give us a brief reminder of what Silverlight is?
Okay, let me just go into that really quickly. So I'm way excited about it. It is going to fundamentally change how we program on the web. Most of the time when we program for the web, we have pretty much static sites that are shipped out and clients just render those. With Silverlight 2, we allow .NET code to execute on the client, and we push the processing from the server to the client. And that's going to be huge. It's going to make websites that are fast, that are interactive, that are shiny, that feel more like real applications. It's a runtime that gets downloaded. So think of this kind of like Flash. If you walk up to a site and you and the site requires Silverlight, but you do not have it installed, you have the option, a little medallion to click on to install it. It runs cross-browser, it runs cross-OS on Mac and PC and Linux. It lets us run .NET code on the client, as I was mentioning. And it also has this powerful rendering engine for declarative markup. So it can consume these XML files called XAML, X-A-M-L files, XAML files. It consumes those files and renders vector graphics and animations according to what it finds there.
Thanks for that quick review. So what new information does Scott give us?
Well, in the post, there is definitely some stuff that we've either heard before or he's hinted at before. So he does go into a little more detail, and we'll cover that right now.
Okay, let's go one by one. What does Scott Guthrie say about the WPF UI framework?
Silverlight has a powerful graphics and animation engine. And like we were talking about, it consumes these XML files, these declarative markup XAML files, and allows us to very easily construct these UIs that are useful, interesting to look at, and very simple to look at and dissect with the eye. I think it's going to be pretty compelling. The WPF world has also found this sort of a scenario very useful. Interestingly, Scott says that the XAML files that Silverlight 2 will consume will be a compatible subset of the WPF UI framework, which is interesting. And he also goes into that into the sample, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I thought it was interesting he used the words compatible subset.
And then what about the rich controls?
In Silverlight 1 and previous versions of Silverlight 2, we have not had some of the more advanced controls that we might need for doing things like user input, things like text boxes, check boxes, radio buttons, those sorts of things. We just haven't had those sorts of things to pull in input from the user. And we've dummied it up and done other things like sucked up information from HTML controls, but that's just not optimal. So now we get a more natural way of collecting user input. Layout management, so stack panels, grid panels, canvases, those sorts of things, so we can organize our content. Common functionality controls, so things that we need to do often, like sliders and scroll views and calendars and date pickers, those sorts of things we get. And then, of course, we get data manipulation controls, so data grid, list box, etc. So if you want to do data binding, you can data bind to a data grid and present your objects that way, in a way that we're all on the Windows world very familiar with.
Now, we've heard before that Silverlight 2 includes rich networking support. Can you give us some more detail about that?
And Scott did go into more information in his post. There are a whole set of tools, a whole suite of tools we can use to interact with the web, starting with REST, WS Star, SOAP, POX, plain old XML, RSS, standard HTTP services. So if you want to use the XML HTTP request object in a way that you're using it in ASP.NET AJAX or in another AJAX application, you can do that. Also, and I think this is the first time we've heard this, Beta 1 also includes built-in support for sockets. So I've done this a couple of times, if you've ever needed to write an application that uses sockets directly, now you'll be able to do that. Doesn't happen very often, but is pretty darn cool.
And then one of my favorites, what about the rich base class library?
So Silverlight 2 has that subset of the base class library, which we've mentioned. You know, we've talked about things like collections and I/O and generics and threading and globalization and XML and that sort of stuff. It has these extra APIs for HTML DOM manipulation and JavaScript integration. And it also includes things like link and link to XML support. So that's going to be pretty useful on the client as well.
And then wasn't there some information about the installer size?
That's true. There is. He put in some information about the installer, and this is just jaw-dropping. For Beta 1, so this might change a little bit by the time it actually releases, but for Beta 1, installer size is 4.3 megabytes and installs in, get this, 4 to 10 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a one-time event, right? I mean, if we want people to use Silverlight, they have to download and install the runtime once. It's just that easy. It has auto-update afterwards, and that's the deal. The actual applications we write in Silverlight are typically going to be very, very small, so a couple of KB. So even compared to using ASP.NET Ajax or some other technologies, other Ajax libraries or whatever, this is a very small, compact tool set.
So how do they pack so much stuff in such a little install?
It turns out that this is a dying art. But if you want to write code in unmanaged C++, you can do that. And if you exclude dependencies and you do some things like that, and then some compiler optimizations using minimum size, you can write some really amazing code in a really small size. And I think that that's ultimately what they've done here. They had a design goal. They started out. They said, we want to have this be small as a part of a fundamental goal of the project. And they were just able to do it. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty cool to see what you can do once you put enough smart people together.
So let's go on to our second question. What does a day in the life of a Silverlight 2 developer look like?
Scott included some sample code in his post, and this is for a Dig application reader. So this is the Dig website. It's the popularity website where you post stories, people vote on stories, and then the most popular appear on Dig. And they also provide some web services so you can consume that information and display it in your own applications.
Let's do this a little differently. Let's cover this information in a scenario type format. Let's say we have a developer named Alice, and she does Silverlight 2 development, and she needs to write a Dig reader. What does this application look like?
Here are the application requirements for the application that was on the blog post. I like this scenario idea. So here's what she needs to write. It needs to be an application. That's a Silverlight application. It's going to display in Silverlight, render from XAML, and it's going to display Dig headlines. So she is going to write an application that displays a list of Dig headlines. A user will then be able to select a headline, click on it, drill down into this modal sort of dialog box that presents and offers the user a more detailed view of the story, including things like the summary or whatever. Then the user can select the story, go to it through a link, or that user can close the modal dialog and see the list of headlines again.
Okay, so Alice is sitting at her desk. Her pointy-haired boss has just dropped this application on her lap. What's her first step?
Well, I see where this is going. Is this the Alice from the comic strip?
No. This is a completely different Alice. This is the one from Alice and Bob in the cryptography circles. The one who's always getting her code intercepted.
I know this Alice. She's less copyrightable and maybe less likely to get us sued. Good choice.
Thank you. Anyway, it's 8:30 a.m. What's Alice's first step for creating this application?
She sees her pointy-haired boss disappear around the corner, and her first step is start Visual Studio 2008. Now, she's already installed. We don't know what the exact story is going to be. We'll hear it mixed, but presumably there's another Silverlight Tools version for the beta. She's installed that. There are more runtime bits. She's installed those. So her machine is up to stuff, and she just goes into Visual Studio, says File, New Project, Silverlight Project. Now, she's going to have a checkbox where she can add an ASP.NET project to the solution in addition. And she's going to do that because then she has an ASP.NET project to go ahead and host that Silverlight project so she can see what she's working on.
So what does Alice get in her new project?
Here are the pieces that are added to the Silverlight project. There's an app.xaml file, and this is for global sorts of things. So brushes and style objects that are shared across the application. And in its code behind file, it's going to have code for application events like application startup and exit, etc. Now, a page.xaml file will also be added. And this is the file that actually is going to be rendered and displayed by default. Now, you can do some other things that are a little more complicated, but by default, this is the file that's going to appear. And it's where she's going to put the stuff that's going to be displayed in Silverlight. In addition, I'd like to point out that the XAML, so these things we just talked about, the XAML file, the code, and static resources, they get built into a ZAP file, a XAP file, a ZAP file. Now that's a zip file, and it's going to do some compression. And what's going to happen is the XML is going to get compressed highly because it's a text file. And the code is already pretty small. And so what you're going to have is a very, very small file to shipped down to the client. Hello World is, any guesses here? 4 KB in size. So very small. So 4.3 megabytes, one time, lifetime, one time event to get Silverlight. Lifetime might be an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. One time event to get the runtime. And then the applications are very small afterwards, to the tune of, on the lower end, 4 KB. And then the Silverlight control is ultimately instantiated in the ASP.NET project by use of an object tag.
So what options does Alice have for laying out her data?
In the beta one, it looks like she's going to have three options, as nearly as we can tell. First one is the canvas. If you've been using the alpha and you've been using Silverlight 1.0, you have a sense of what this is. It allows you to do absolute positioning with attributes. You can have your canvas, and then you can position elements on it. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. She's not going to choose that, though. She has the option of a stack panel, which supports positioning elements in rows or columns. So you can change the orientation with a property, with an attribute. And you add elements directly to the stack panel element that you want to have displayed. So you can choose, do I want to have them go across the page, or do I want to have them go down the page? Not quite complicated enough for Alice. She's not going to choose it. The next one is the grid panel. Alice is going to use the grid panel. It's a little more complicated, and here's how it works. She declares it, and then she declares the rows and column widths in definitions. Then the visual elements are positioned by specifying the grid columns they should be attached to.
So is this like an HTML table?
It's kind of, yeah, conceptually it's sort of similar. It's the same sort of idea. And I think it's going to be widely used because it allows us to present information in both row and column format and do data binding.
Okay, so Alice has this great grid laying out all her data. How does she connect to her data? How does she get the information from Dig?
Right, well, she has a couple of choices, and we've talked about these before. So REST and SOAP and WSTAR and RSS, and you know, she could consume a JSON web service or whatever, or even write her own sockets-based application. It turns out that Dig exports a web service in REST format, and so she's going to use REST. It's easy. She'll get the information back in XML, and she'll be on her way.
But the Dig information's on a different domain. Won't client-side policies prevent her from accessing the Dig information?
And that's something that's brand new in this post, too. This is something that we had a sense was coming, but we didn't know how exactly it was going to be here. Cross-domain network access. So this would be a problem in AJAX, in, well, regular AJAX, or in ASP.NET AJAX. It would be a problem going cross-domain. We'd have to do something like create a bridge. So talk to our server, which ultimately talks to some other server. Not so in Silverlight 2. It has this ability to consume XML policy files on the host. And it also honors the Flash cross-domain policy files. Luckily for Alice, Dig has an XML policy file for the REST service. So she's all good. She basically just specifies the URL in her code, and she's on her way.
Okay, so she creates a Dig Story class with the appropriate members.
Right, that's the next piece. She has a Dig Story class. She has that in one hand, and she has the XML in the other hand that she's retrieved from the service. Now, she's got to consume that XML, parse it apart, and build her objects. Now, how do you think she does this? There's a conventional solution, right?
I'd say a for loop where she reads out the data using an XML reader class.
Right, right. So that would work. And in fact, it would work. You have access to the XML reader, so you could do that. But there's a shorter and more elegant way to do it. And get this, it doesn't use a for loop, or in fact, any loop at all.
No loop.
No loop. And guess what? She doesn't even use the XML reader class.
So how does Alice parse the XML without a loop? Link.
Yeah, the new way of doing things, right? She uses this link statement to break apart the XML and populate her objects. It's very simple and very elegant.
So just an aside for a minute, what kind of for loops can link replace? All of them?
Not all, but most. There's a lot that it can. Most of the time when we write these for loops, we're doing one of two things, right? first thing is that often we're rolling over a set of objects to find a subset. Link is perfect for that. In fact, that's what it's written for, is finding a subset of objects. So it does that very well. The second thing we do a lot of is that we roll over a set of objects and we actually do something to them. Again, Link can fit that role. There are other, and I think ultimately less prevalent cases where we have for loops that do a significant amount of processing or application logic inside of. And Link isn't going to fit in there, but I think in the majority of cases, it's going to, at the least, be an option.
Thanks, Eric. That's all we have time for. Alice will have to finish up her project next week. Soon, we're going to have even more information about Silverlight from the MIX 08 conference. Join us as this new information becomes available. Thanks for listening to the Sparkling Client podcast.